It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
I know people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Time for another episode of the Fenway Rundown. This week without Chris Cotillo, my usual co-host. He's taking a little time off, so I'm flying solo today. And we're happy to be joined today by Red Sox Director of Player Development, Brian Abraham, who's going to give us a rundown on all things Red Sox minor league. Talk about some of the top prospects, the progress they're making, and some timetables for some of the better players. As always, we thank Brian for his time and his information, and we'll get to him now. And a reminder that you can be part of the Red Sox Insider Text Program. All you have to do is text the word join to 617-751-6257, then click the word, click the link and subscribe. It's free for 14 days and $4.99 per month thereafter. It allows you to keep up on all things Red Sox, get the latest information, ask questions of all of us, Chris Cotillo, Chris Smith, and myself, and provide questions for future mailbag editions. And now, Brian Abraham. Welcome to a second episode this week of Fenway Rundown. As we noted, our guest today is Brian Abraham, Director of Player Development for the Red Sox. Brian, thanks for joining us. You've been a previous guest. We're happy to welcome you back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Currently taking a look at the Red Sox single A affiliate in Greenville, hoping that weather holds out and a doubleheader gets played. We'll kind of take you all through the system, Brian, and I think get some updates on players that that listeners want to know about. Just first of all, it's kind of an overview. Where do you think the system stands now in general, having made some improvements? Certainly the system has kind of gone up in the rankings of third-party people taking a look at these things. What's your assessment of where the Red Sox player development system sits now compared to, say, a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think it's continuing to improve. We've raised the floor of talent, of the ability to provide depth for our major league team. I think in the short term, if you look at our major league roster, some of the injuries we've had, some of the guys we've had banged up, I think one of the main points of having a farm system is to provide support for that major league team and ultimately help support winning in Boston. And I think whether it be guys who started the year in Boston that were minor leaguers last year or guys that have had to come up, whether it be through minor league free agency or just development within our system, they've helped impact the major league club in a bunch of different ways in the field, on the mound, and at the plate, and has helped us to, I think put some of those early season injuries behind us and propel us to some wins where maybe it seemed like that wouldn't necessarily be the case. So it's really great to have that depth, really great to have next man up mentality. You know, AC and the major league staff, the transition from AAA to the big leagues has been seamless, and we've seen guys come up and make an impact. And that to me is one of the best parts. And I think just throughout the system overall, we've seen significant improvements on a lot of our players, our top players on the position player side. New infrastructure, obviously, on the pitching side, we've seen some significant gains from some of our prospects, some of our middle tier players that are hoping to be more improved players and be the prospects that are highly rated throughout baseball. But, I think a ton of credit to our staff, a ton of credit to our leadership group and PD, our coordinators, our directors that are involved in creating systems in place for our players to get better, creating goals for our players to get better, and having a clear understanding of what they need to do to impact ultimately Boston, not just the A ball teams, not just the double A teams, but do so at the big league level. So I'm happy with where we are. Still room to go for sure. But I think the training environments and the work that's being done in our department, in our organization, has been as good as it's been in multiple years.
There's been so much, as you hinted, attention and credit for the development or the improvement of the Major League pitching staff. We've seen a remarkable turnaround. The Red Sox continue to lead the league in ERA and rotation ERA. There have obviously been some things implemented that have helped the Major League program. What are you seeing down below? Because obviously, when you're talking about prospects and kids anywhere from 19 to 20 to a few years older, sometimes even younger, this is not going to happen overnight. But what sort of incremental progress have you seen pitching-wise throughout the system, and maybe specifically some changes that were implemented by the new administration led by Craig Breslow?
Yeah, I think whenever you have new voices, new people coming in, they have a clear and different look of what is being done. I think there were some really good things being done here, but I also think there has been some really good adjustments that have been made as well. This has definitely been said a few times, and I know Justin Willard preaches this, but keeping the main thing, really focusing on our pitcher strengths, really focusing on scalable skills that are going to allow them to have success in the minor leagues and ultimately the big leagues, which is the point. Focusing on strength, focusing on adding good weight, focusing on adding power to their fastball, and then improving the stuff of their secondaries and challenging with both of those types of pitches within the strike zone and getting out to the strike zone. So again, I think some of the systems that obviously from the top, Brez, Bales, and really I think Justin, who oversees our pitching department now, some of the systems that have been put in place, the processes that have put in place, all the way down to the DR to AAA, the work that is done daily, the plans that the players have to improve on a daily basis. I think a lot of credit goes to that. And then obviously the staff on the ground that are providing the insight and the thoughts and the adjustments for our players to make the improvements. And it goes even further beyond that. It's tight feedback loops, it's communication, it's education. It's being very clear with our players about what we want them to improve upon and then why. It's great to say we need you to do this, but if I'm a player, I want to know why is this going to help me become a really good major leaguer? And I think, Justin and the staff, Chris Mears, Nick Otte, Walter Miranda, these guys have done an amazing job of providing the insight to our players with information, with data, with visuals, and then seeing that those adjustments and the improvements being made in their work in the mound, in the weight room, and in games as well. So I think player development is such a unique place, baseball, the sport itself, because we have a ton of training that happens pre-game, and then there are the games as well. But the reality is a lot of what needs to be worked on happens within game situations. So I think really understanding that a pitcher or even a position player can focus on their goals within the game, and the results might not necessarily be there initially, but over the long term, they'll have the success that we want them to have because they are working on the goals that we have laid out for them. So it's a group effort. I saw Brez made a point like, hey, if it works for the first month, there's no reason why I can't continue to work in the future. And I think that is something that we've taken a hold of, and we're excited about where we are. But like I said earlier, like there's still a ton of ton to improve upon, and a tireless group of staff and a tireless group of players that want to improve, I think, is where we are. We're excited to continue to move there.
It's no secret, Brian, that one of the changes at the major league level from a pitching standpoint and pitching program is is less reliance on four-seam fastballs and more on breaking pitches and off-speed stuff. Has that same directive trickled down to the player development system as well as a philosophical change?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone is necessarily against four-seam fastball, but I think one of the things that we as leaders of an organization, leaders of a business that is trying to improve and have success is just because things have been done a certain way for a long time doesn't necessarily mean they're bad, doesn't necessarily mean they're good either. they can be improved upon. So I think, you know, get ahead with your fastball has been something that has been talked about for years within baseball. I'm not saying that's wrong, but if your best pitch is not your fastball, if your best pitch to throw a strike is not your fastball, then don't use your fastball. I think it's kind of keeping it simple in a lot of ways. And hey, change is difficult, change is hard. We have all been brought up in different ways. And baseball specifically, I think, is a traditional game that is based on records and numbers, and you know, things have been done a certain way for years. And a lot of that is awesome. But I think to have the success and to be leaders within the industry and leaders within the sport, you need to challenge the norms and challenge what we know and be willing to take chances and try new things. So again, I think it's really focusing on the pitcher's strength. So if a pitcher does not, if their strength is not, you know, a four seam fastball that, you know, whether it be grades out well, has the velocity or has the shape that we want, yeah, we're going to use other pitches that can get outs in the strike zone throughout their outings, throughout their early work and so forth. So again, I think it's individualized. I think just the nature of the four seam fastball pitch, like not a lot of pitchers, I think, within our system currently have that profile. So I think that's pretty clear on our big league staff as well. So I think the players dictate sometimes the philosophy, but I think the philosophy itself, just throwing your best stuff in the strike zone, can be adjusted based on who the pitcher is and what their strengths are.
There's been a focus too on starting pitching depth because the major league club has been hit so hard with injuries, with four members of the starting rotation, or at least the projected rotation, spending time on the IL. As we know, Brian, AAA has sort of morphed into an extension of your major league roster where it's about depth and having some guys who can come up and fill in when there are injuries. So it's less prospect based than perhaps the levels below, but you do have an interesting name at AAA in the rotation that people have been paying attention to. And that's Richard Fitz, one of the guys who came over in the Verdugo trade. Give us a little update on him if you would.
Yeah, just obviously his first full month in AAA. And, you know, I think he has come as advertised, and everything we saw during spring training, during the offseason at the rookie program. We're very pleased with the pitcher that he is, the person that he is, his willingness to continue to push himself, challenge himself. The results haven't been there every outing, but, you know, he's continued to improve his arsenal. He's continued to improve his fastball velocity and maintain it throughout his starts. And he's been a workhorse outside of his starts as well, putting in the work in the gym, continuing to add strength, and taking the ball within the rotation when he's called upon. So very pleased with the progress. I think he'd probably say the first month didn't go as exactly how he wanted. There were some hard hit balls at times, but as I said earlier, I think some of those hard hit balls are a result of him focusing on some of the areas he needs to improve upon to become a good major league pitcher, not just a good AAA pitcher. And I think for me, like, just because the numbers weren't perfect in AAA, I think there was a ton of success. He threw a lot of innings. He got a lot of outs in the strike zone. His K rate continued to climb. So we're very pleased with what he's done the first month or so with us in Worcester.
You're sitting in Greenville as we record this with some lousy weather and waiting to see if a makeup doubleheader gets played. Certainly, part of the challenge of the player development system, particularly early on in the year, is dealing with some inclement weather. You've certainly had that at AA Portland, where you're going to get cold temperatures up in southern Maine this type of year, some rain, maybe even some snow at times. What's that challenge like for, you know, particularly a lot of your top prospects are guys who grew up in Southern California or Florida and are used to, you know, having 80 degree temperatures in April and May. All of a sudden it's 42 and it's sleeting out here. What do you tell them about dealing with the elements, and how does that play in their development, just having to overcome some of these challenges that they hadn't faced before?
I like to tell them that it's colder in October, so get used to it. But, you know, I think it's, you know, it's dealing with the constraints that you're given. You know, the reality is we play in Boston, we play in Worcester, we play in Portland. It's going to be a little bit colder to start the year. And hopefully by the end of the season, and as we go into early to mid to late October, it's going to be colder. But, you know, we do what we can. Obviously, we have really good facilities to be able to get our work and our training in. It's definitely a challenge, but the other team's dealing with it as well. It is a bit of an adjustment for some of our players who, you know, I think we have a couple guys on our Portland team. I know for a fact there were a couple guys during the rookie program this year that saw snow for the first time. So it is maybe I take it a little bit for granted from being a New Englander and just it being a part of my life. But the reality is for our guys to be successful players in Boston, they're going to have to deal with the cold and play in the cold and be able to throw a ball across the diamond after sitting for a couple outs and be able to run down a ball in the outfield after not doing anything, be able to hit a ball in the gap and run the bases after, you know, sitting on the bench for a couple of innings. So they do an amazing job of making the adjustments and understanding it's just the reality. And, you know, we try to support them as much as we can in terms of recovery, in terms of the training, in terms of all the other areas that we can control to help support them when it's time for them to compete.
Double A is the prospect level. That's where you hear people like yourself talk about the real prospects separating themselves and proving themselves at that level with just one more step to go before what they hope is a path to the big leagues. And there's no question that the three best prospects in your organization are all currently in Portland, all off to, I guess, decent starts, but all with their challenges. Let's go through them one by one. First, your outfielder, Roman Anthony, having a bit of a difficult time, offensively at least, at Portland. Just looking at the numbers, what are your impressions a month or so in for him?
Yeah, he came out of the gates hot, but has definitely slowed down a bit. But, you know, his K percentage is definitely a little bit higher than we'd like. You know, one of his focuses is being, ironically, a little bit more aggressive in the strike zone, you know, pitches over the heart of the plate. I think, to me, being able to do damage to those pitches early in the count will allow him to not have to go as deep into counts where he's trying to protect with two strikes. But I do think for him, for Roman specifically, you know, some of the numbers that maybe aren't on the surface, you know, he's still hitting the ball really hard. He's still driving the ball. You know, some of our numbers that we're able to predict a little bit more based on ball flight, based on quality of contact. Those numbers are still really strong. So we're still pleased with where he is and the progress he's made. But, you know, I think he's seeing the game of adjustments that happens, especially at the upper levels within baseball. Other teams know who he is now. Other teams have seen video on him. They have made adjustments to him at the plate. Now he's going to have to make adjustments back. So it's certainly not due to lack of work. It's certainly not due to lack of focus on the training that he needs to, on the areas that he needs to improve upon. So, you know, it seems maybe that his progress has been slowed on the baseball card numbers, I think we're still really happy about the way he's hitting the baseball and impacting the baseball. I think if we can get that K rate and some of those swings in the zone to decrease a little bit more, we're looking at a guy who's going to continue to put up really big numbers for us.
And he must be one of the youngest players in the Eastern League, Brian. I'm assuming he has his 20th birthday, I think, coming up early next week. He's still a teenager, technically. You know, to have even the degree of success he's had at that level and still be 19 years old in a league where, you know, you've got some guys drafted out of college that naturally are going to be a few years older. When you take that into account, I guess that probably puts some of his struggles into some perspective here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at someone like Roman, he's moved up fairly quick because of the performance, because of the work, because of everything that we've seen him do. So there's a learning curve. There's going to be ups and downs. It's baseball. I think he wants to go four hard hit balls and make every play in the field. That's just not going to happen. So I do think some of the, you know, whether it be hitting a ball hard and getting out, or maybe swinging a pitch outside zone sometimes, I think those are good learning experiences for someone like Roman and some others on that team. Baseball is a really hard sport. You know, you look at some other prospects within the game that have gone up to the big leagues and had some struggles. They're still going to be really, really good players over their career. But it also just shows how hard this game is and how important it is for us to improve the skills that scale for these guys. So when they do go up to the big leagues and they do have struggles, it's not, what am I doing? They can go back to their training, go back to what they know that they can improve upon and work on, and allow the results to ultimately take care of themselves because of the work that they're putting in pregame and off the field.
Another of the big three in Portland is catcher Kyle Teal, the number one pick catcher out of the University of Virginia. one of the best catching prospects in the game. Where is he at?
Yeah, it's tough for a catcher because I think, for me being, having that as a background and really loving the position, I think anyone you talk to who's been a catcher or that's been a part of their lives, it's such a selfless position where you're focusing on the pitching staff, where you're focusing on controlling the game and handling the game and, allowing the pitchers to have the success that we want them to have. We talked about it earlier, throwing their best stuff in the zone. Like, that is Kyle's ultimate responsibility on a day in, day out basis. Luckily for us and luckily for Kyle, he's a two-way player that can really impact baseball and do damage on both sides of the ball. He's improved his walks. He's still impacting the baseball a ton. I think probably being a little bit more selective in his swing decisions could improve upon. He can tend to get a little anxious at times at the plate. We certainly want the aggressiveness. We certainly want the swings in the heart of the zone where he can do damage. But again, I think similar to Roman at times, the double A pitching, sometimes double A pitching is better than triple A because you have the prospects with the best stuff and are still trying to harness it. So, you might have a guy who's darting up the corners, then he's missing a far as well, but with really good secondary. So, he continues to hit the ball hard. His bat speed has increased. His hard hit percentage has increased. So we love what we see out of Kyle. Again, I think someone who came out hot has hit a little bit of a slow spell, but undoubtedly someone who's going to come out of it and still be really impactful for the rest of this year. And like I said, because of the position that he plays, he's an offensive minded catcher for sure, but I don't want us to sell short how good of a defensive player he is, not only receiving and calling a game, but throwing guys out, controlling the runners with the base pass, and just really commanding the game for the pitching staff and for the rest of the team. He's a real leader and mature, and love the way he goes about his business in the short amount of time. It hasn't even been a full year in pro ball, but it feels like he's been here for years. And that's a credit to him, the work he's put in and the person he is.
What sort of progress has he made with his game calling? Because I'm guessing that even at a big time ACC program like Virginia, there's a limited amount of input that he had there in calling pitches in college. So when you're playing pro ball for the first time and getting to double A pretty quickly and dealing with some advanced arms, how has that part of his game come along now that responsibility is on his shoulders too?
Yeah, very well. I mean, he's a very intelligent kid. Getting to know the pitchers to me is priority number one, because, when we're focusing on the pitcher's strengths and what they need to do to get guys out of the zone, it's understanding what their stuff is, what their stuff looks like. And then it's a balancing of also the work that these pitchers are being put in. So, there's certain times where Kyle's calling certain pitches that he needs to call because the pitcher needs to work on those. Might not necessarily be the best outcome at the end of the day, but it's ultimately to allow that pitcher to have the success that we want them to have. So, he handles that entire process, the advanced process, the understanding of our pitchers, the understanding of opposing pitchers very well. He's great at making in-game adjustments. And, he's very lucky to have someone like Chad Epperson, Mickey Zhang, to be there to support him in the role. And, I know he's a guy that pitchers like to throw. And I think without getting into specifics about evaluation numbers, I think if you ask pitchers who they like to throw to, and it's Kyle Teal, that's a really good sign that he's doing something right. So, he continues to improve and progress in that area. And I think he loves soaking up the information. He can't get enough of it. And he is able to hold it really well. So, it can be difficult coming from a place in college, and I don't know exactly what UVA's process was, but I think the norm now is for catchers not to call and not to understand what the game situation is. So Kyle has come well beyond his years in that area and continues to mature in that area.
And finally, of the big three, shortstop Marcelo Meyer, who is healthy again, something he was not for a good chunk of last year. In a lot of ways, it was kind of a lost year of development, or at least a lost half season with the shoulder issue. He came to camp healthy, and we're starting to see what a healthy Marcelo Meyer can achieve on the field. First of all, how big a difference is what you're seeing now with a healthy Meyer compared to what he battled through with physical issues in the shoulder last year?
Yeah, I would say not only healthy, but he's stronger. The added weight that he's put on, the focus to improve in that area, I think we've seen significant changes in his body and his ability to impact baseball and also his range of the field. So those kind of all work together. And again, a ton of credit to him. It's really easy, I think, to go into a rehab process and say, I want to get healthy, but to say, I want to come out bigger, stronger, faster, a better version. That's what he was able to do. So a ton of credit to him. You know, we are seeing the Marcelo that I think we saw initially, you know, a little bit more swag, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, feeling like he is the best on the field, and then showing it. You know, his strikeout rate has decreased. His walks have stayed steady. He continues to impact the baseball. Significantly improved his chase percentage, which was something that we had talked to him about last year in the soft season. And he's battling more baseballs in the zone. Definitely can get better in that area, but you know, we're seeing a guy that could be an impact player for us up the middle, and it's really fun to watch. I whenever someone's not feeling 100% and they're not themselves, they're not going to be the best version of themselves every day. A ton of credit to him for being able to maintain his personality and the way he was able to handle himself day to day. Because when you're not feeling your best, it's hard to do that. So, you know, he's a leader, he leads by example. So to be able to do that, even when he was not 100%, I give him a ton of credit. And now to do that back when he is 100%, when he's feeling good, performing, and one of the leaders of that club, it's been really fun to see. And, you know, I think if you ask him, he feels like he can still get a lot better. And that, to me, between all three, is a common theme: the competitiveness, the work that they put in with each other. They're challenging themselves to be the best version of themselves, but also be better than each other, which is really fun. The entire team, Portland team, that clubhouse, the group of players there, it's a really fun group to be around because they push themselves to be better. Granted, there's a win and loss component, but they want to win at their individual game. If they know they do that, then it will allow for wins on the field. So it's a fun group, and excited to always visit there.
Well, what's the dynamic like there when you have the three guys we've talked about at Portland are among the top 50 prospects in the game, probably in a lot of rankings, or if they're not 50, top 60 or 75, certainly. There's a lot of attention paid to guys who are 19, 20, 21 years old. They know that that they're under somewhat of a microscope with all the media that now focuses on top prospects. How do they handle that attention? And, you know, what do you tell them about the amount of attention that players of that caliber are getting, even at this early stage of their professional career?
I think they each embrace it in some sense. You know, they want to be really good baseball players and successful major leaguers for a long time. That obviously comes with the territory. I think in today's world, that's a little bit more normal than it was 5, 6, 7, you know, 10 years ago. I think on our end, you know, whether it be media training, whether it be, you know, in spring training during the season, conversations with these guys about, how to present themselves and on and off the field. And, you know, our hope is that the lessons and the education and, you know, what we teach to be young Red Sox baseball players allows them to be representative of themselves as people and as baseball players. So, you know, they embrace it. They love it. At the end of the day, they work hard and want to be really good at baseball. And, you know, with that comes media attention, with that comes more interviews and those conversations. But I think what their focus is on the field. Their focus is being really good baseball players, improving their craft, competing against each other. And, you know, they're one of the things I really, really enjoy, you know, about those three and some of the others on the team is that they're good people and baseball players. You know, we can have conversations about life, about families, about things they like to do off the baseball field to really build that trust, build those relationships, and then ultimately to have the conversations that we need to have for them to continue to be better on the field. And they all have great personalities, but at the end of the day, they want to win in Boston. And I think that is something that you get from them, even while they're in AA. They compete, they push, they challenge, they're willing to fail. They're willing to fail so they can improve what they're working on. I think because of today's day and age, it's a little bit more normal for media to be around and to do the interviews, whether it be Twitter, Instagram, whatever the social media is. Like, that's a much more normal thing for a lot of our players than it maybe had been in the past. And, you know, I think, you know, they're not looking for it, but I think when they know they have to be a part of it, and they know that they represent themselves and the Boston Red Sox organization as future potential impact players, that they are willing to be a part of that and do what they can to help support the organization themselves.
So Anthony, Teal, and Meyer are all in Portland for the second year. Teal and Anthony got up there late in the year last year. Meyer obviously didn't play after, I think it was late May or early June last year with the shoulder. So not a ton of experience at Double A, but that's building. Everyone wants to know about the fast track and how quickly, you know, they're going to be able to impact the major league roster. What do you need to see from each of those three guys to move them up to the next level, to Triple A Worcester? And how close do you think any of those guys are to meeting those, you know, having all those boxes checked?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to put a timeline on anyone's, you know, promotions. I think there are certain performance indicators that we have globally for our organization that players are hopeful to reach and perform and provide the consistency to be able to perform those norms. And then each player, each of those guys has individual goals on the baseball field, offensively, defensively, in the weight room that we are hoping that they achieve and reach and surpass for them to either reach the next goal or eventually reach that goal at the next level. So I think consistency in working toward those areas is a part of that because that allows you to achieve the goals that we have for them. So, you know, I think that if they continue on the track that they're going on, there's no doubt in my mind that they will eventually get to AAA in the big leagues at some point. Again, there's a lot of factors that come into promotions. It's playing time. It's major league depth. As you noted earlier, our AAA team has a few more older players in minor league free agents than maybe it has in the past to provide for that major league team. But I also think, too, like the reality is for some of our priority players, for some of our prospects, they are going to push, make us make hard decisions and move them when the you know we and they are deemed ready based off their performance, based on the work. So, you know, putting them in the best environment for them to be a long-term big leaguer and have the long-term success that we want is ultimately what we're going to try to do. That could be in Double A, that could be in Triple A. When that exactly is, I don't have the answer, unfortunately. But you know, I feel like they're all progressing on the right track towards that promotion in the future.
Injuries, unfortunately, are a part of player development. We talked about Meyer missing a good chunk of last year with the shoulder. You also had Miguel Blaze, one of your top all-around outfield prospects, miss a lot of time with a shoulder issue last year. And more recently, a highly regarded catcher, Johan Fran Garcia, went down with a knee issue. Where does that stand? Because the video looked ugly as he made that big turn at first base and kind of crumpled. I know it's been termed a sprained knee, but how long might he miss?
Yeah, unfortunately, we some more testing and some information we received. It's a significant knee injury, and he's going to be out for the season. Don't have details exactly on the injury, but you know, unfortunate for him. You know, he's been one of our best performers offensively and defensively. Continues to improve down in Salem and was making a ton of progress. So, unfortunately, that's a part of this game. That's a part of baseball, and you hate to see that happen. But he's going to be out for the remainder of the season, unfortunately.
Will he need surgery, Brian? I'm assuming.
Yeah, he needs surgery.
Has that been scheduled, or any idea what the timetable is there?
No timetable right now. Just with any type of injury like this, some of it is, you know, making sure that the knee itself is, you know, after a fairly significant injury, there's swelling and a lot of things that I'm not an expert in discussing, but it'll be in the near future, and we'll make sure that he's attended to accordingly. We set him down to Fort Myers, and he will handle his prehab and his post-surgical care in Fort Myers. So, you know, like some others, like you mentioned, Marcelo and Miguel Blaze, we're going to look at it as an opportunity for him to improve, whether it be, you know, strength, nutrition, you know, strengthen his lower half, and then ultimately improve on the baseball field as well. But, you know, try to take injuries are part of this game, and we try to take the negative out of them and make it a positive so he can come back better than he was before.
We talked a little bit about pitching at the beginning and Richard Fitz, who's probably your top starter at AAA, but wanted to get quick updates on a couple of other arms that I know you're very high on. Wickelman Gonzalez and Luis Paredes. What have you seen from them through the first month or so?
Yeah, Wickelman had a bit of a slow start, had some short outings, but you know, I think there was a couple adjustments that he made to his early work and his in between outing work, and some conversations that he had with our staff, I think has really allowed him to turn the corner and throw more strikes in the zone. That has been a focus of his, challenging the strike zone. He has a strong arsenal of swing and miss stuff, but he has to throw strikes. So we've seen a lot of progress made. His last couple outings have been superb. Perales, a little bit of a slow start, had some side discomfort, so he missed about two starts and really just focused on strengthening that and throwing on the side. But, you know, his last couple outings, he's been pretty dominant. He's challenged with his fastball, uses secondary stuff, and has really, again, continued the challenge in the strike zone and gotten out. So we're really happy with the progress that he's made. And, you know, he seems in a, you know, while he's in high A, he has matured a lot and has shown a willingness to change some of the things maybe he's done in the past with pitches and the way he's gone about his work. And we've seen significant improvements. So really pleased with both unique as 40 man players, not in AAA, which isn't the norm these days all the time. So I think some low hanging fruit for each of them at the start of the season. And every player has a little bit of a different start. Some guys start really strong, feel comfortable to start the year. Other guys, someone like, you know, Wilkerman, who hasn't pitched in the cold as often, as we talked about earlier, like that's a bit of an adjustment for him. So both were really happy with the progress they've continued to make and excited about the development that they continue to have to go through this year.
Brian Abraham, Director of Player Development for the Red Sox. Brian, I hope that rain holds out. You get your two in today in Greenville. I want to thank you for stopping by and giving us an update on the system. Appreciate the time.
Thanks so much, Sean. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Brian Abraham for spending time with us today on the Fenway Rundown to give us an update on everything in the Red Sox minor league system. We appreciate the time. A reminder that you can stay current on all Red Sox news, get updates, ask questions of myself or Chris Cotillo or Chris Smith, and supply questions for future mailbag editions. And you can do that by joining our Insider Text program. Just text the word JOIN to 617-751-6257. Then click the link to subscribe. It'll be free for 14 days. And after that, it's just $4.99 per month.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.